Monday, July 6th. The golden days began to tarnish. While Linda and I were still in bed reading the paper, Linda Bird came waltzing in, all excited, to talk to her daddy about the White House job that she expects to get. No pay, of course, but I had told her that we could see if she could work for Mac George Bundy or somebody over in the West Wing after we return. She needs something exciting to occupy her days between now and the last of August when we go to the convention. Her daddy popped that balloon quick. "You'd only be in the way," he said. Then he went through the, "If you had only learned typewriting and shorthand, you'd be real valuable anywhere," routine. Lyndon is completely adamant that the girls should take typing and shorthand, and I agree with him because it's a tool with which to get a paycheck. But Linda Bird is equally adamant that she's not going to, in fact that she can't, because one summer she did try typing. I think perhaps it's not just rebellion to family. Perhaps it stems back to that muscular disease that she had when she was 9 or 10, a derivative of rheumatic fever. We separated in angry tears, that is Linda Bird, but I'm glad to say that Lyndon came back later, trying to tell her how many other things she could do to fill up the summer. And I'm going to try to get her started in some kind of volunteer work, such as teaching children who have difficulty learning, or in Margie McNamara's Expanding Horizons. Today should be full of work, and I'm in a humor to do it. 3 days of play is enough for me. But when Lennon insisted that I go over to the Shorn Horse with him, it was one last chance, and I couldn't pass it up. So I went with him and Jesse and met A.W. over there, and we drove around over the prettiest ranch of all. I love that new road, built precipitously along the edge of the cliff, looking down into the valley, with huge boulders that rise on each side and almost meet above the road. The perfect place to hold up the stagecoach. There was much talk of the big question. He wants to get out. There is no way out. As Ed Weisel expressed it, looking at me rather shocked. Bird, I don't know any honorable way for him not to run. A.W. was the most subtle one of us. He said, "We just want you to do whatever it is that's best for you, and you're the only man that can make up your mind. Only just let me know a few weeks first, so that I can unload some of the land and property and cattle and things I've bought." Jesse was more forthright. He said, "Speaking as a selfish citizen, I hope that you will. And then, when and if you're elected, I hope you'll just make an announcement right away that you're one president who's going to hold the job down for 4 years if you live, and do the best you can for everybody, black and white, Democrat and Republican, and not seek re-election." On our return to the ranch, I met Wheezy Deeth and Roy White. First, we sat down to a delicious lunch. Fresh corn and thin, tender steak. How I have overindulged in these 3.5 days. Then, we drove down to the house where Lyndon was born with Roy, and a whole back seat full of books of wallpaper. And we chose some for the bedroom in which, presumably, Lyndon was born. The texture of the limestone rocks in the fireplaces is charming. Roy has done a loving job here, although he had so little to begin with, but he faithfully searched until he found the foundations of the house. The lightning rods, the part that go down into the ground on each side of the house, next to the chimney, were very good evidence. They were there, broken off some 2 or 3 feet above the ground. We chose an old Victorian wallpaper that sings in perfect harmony with the limestone fireplace. Made some decisions about wallpaper and a few about light fixtures. Roy has loved doing this. His fence is charming around the place. And then we came back to the house, and with James, Gertrude, Mary, and Wheezy, I went over the house doing a bunch of housekeeping details, congratulating James on the zinnias, which have never before been so beautiful, pointing out that we needed at least 3 copper containers on the mantel at all times, and finding a very delightful place in the corner of the big living room for the old pine cupboard that had been given to us in Finland in October or September of last year. Urged Mary and Gertrude to put up the corn the very minute it became ripe, to see that we got a large quantity of peaches in the deep freeze at the lowest price, and plenty of preserves because Zephyr won't have time to make any this year. Now that Lyndon comes home for lunch every day, bringing company, and so she's a 2-meal-a-day cook now. Then I tried to reach Mrs. Truman Fawcett in Johnson City and talk to Truman about what use any community organizations, such as a woman's club, a historical society, or 4-H groups, or PTA, or Chamber of Commerce, or whatever they might be, could make of Mr. and Ms. Sam Johnson's old house in Johnson City, with us taking care of taxes and insurance, and perhaps the organization taking care of cleaning and general maintenance, and more especially of dishing it out to each organization for its use. He promised to have his wife look into it and hopefully to get me some kind of a proposal within a week or so. I dislike uselessness and emptiness, and I do so hope we can put this house to some appropriate use. Then in the afternoon, about 4, we got in the helicopter and flew to Austin, having our last view of the hill country from the air, and Lyndon spoke down rather forlornly into the talking machine goodbye to A.W., who was driving along somewhere unseen below us on the highway. But the voice came back, clear and strong. Goodbye, come home soon. At Bergstrom, we went in quickly to look at a portrait of Lyndon, full figure, done by someone named Wilson, whom I don't know, commissioned by Harry Jerzig and some friends, which is to hang in the state capitol. It's a rather good likeness. The hands are good. It's rather photographic and lacking in any search for the soul or any touch of greatness, but I do not think it's bad. And then we flew to Washington so swiftly, less than 3 hours, if only we could do this more often. And this time the papers had not been bad. They had been restive and annoyed because they didn't have more news from us, and so they had cooked up some of their own. They discovered the Haywood Ranch and had some rather attractive pictures of it from the air. Johnson, for fun, has a hideaway ranch. He boats and hunts deer in private at Texas Retreat. Uses a new cruiser to give lessons in water skiing. Reportedly, Lyndon, at the wheel of a black runabout, towed Linda Bird on an aqua board, trying to teach her how to water ski. Good thing she doesn't read absolutely everything, because she's an excellent water skier. And according to this, after 3 or 4 spills, residents reported, the presidential family gave up the water skiing lessons and went zipping off in the runabout in pursuit of the 28-foot motor cruiser that had preceded them down the lake. I have no idea who this was. However, I could forgive them because they spoke about how the 20-mile-long lake was created by the Alvin Wirtz Dam, and that the dam was named in honor of one of Lyndon's old friends from New Deal days, the man was his first political patron and persuaded him to run for Congress in 37. I rejoice at credit to that unforgettable man. Back at the White House, the dogs were eagerly awaiting us, and we had a happy tussle with them at the door. But we had to wait a good long while to see Lucy Baines, who was full of news about her job in mothering the young boy who had had the terrific fall in the Capitol. Sitting on a banister, had fallen off a story and a half onto a cement floor, had broken quite a few bones, and Lucy had stepped in as close of kin. She and are still having their ups and downs.